time now for NHL Hour with Bill Clement and Commissioner Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
And welcome, everyone, to the NHL Hour. We are at the NHL Store, powered by Reebok in the heart of Manhattan. You're listening to us on XM 204 and NHL.com. Let me give you the phone numbers right now and get in line, get the queue started, because Gary and I are going to get to our special guest pretty quickly. But here's the phone number. It's 877-645-6696, 877-645-6696. The email address, NHLHour at NHL.com. Haven't seen you for a couple of weeks. How's life?
Life is good. Where have you been?
I was actually locked in a soundproof booth with Gary Thorne, which was a lot of fun, last week, finishing off the NHL, EA Sports NHL 09 game.
How did it go?
Fantastic.
Good game?
It's going to be a great game, and to spend a week in Vancouver, I mean, come on. Can that be punishing?
But you were locked in a little room.
But with Gary, I was great to work with him. I miss working with Gary.
Well, and I missed working with you last week
thanks.
As well. I substituted Bill Daly for Bill Clement.
How did he do?
He did great.
I don't want to hear that.
No, not quite. Well, he's not here today, and you are. So that tells you everything you need to know.
Okay, I hope the ink is dried in the contract. By the way, I don't have a contract. That doesn't matter.
You don't?
Would
you like one?
Love one.
But we haven't negotiated the terms.
Do we need to do this right now?
No.
As you said to me once, we'll take this offline. We'll do it that way. How's your week been?
My week has been fine. I have trouble remembering what I did an hour ago, but it's been a busy week, and it's been a good week. And the races are incredible. Oh. I mean, you can't even keep track of what the potential playoff matchups would be because they're changing night to night.
One of these days when we have enough time, and we don't right now because we need to get to our guest, I want to ask you how you deal with stress and what are the stress points for being a commissioner of the National Hockey League.
I love stress. I thrive.
You do, don't you?
I consume stress. And I give stress. As Frank Brown is nodding his head and Greg Baldinger is nodding his head.
They're laughing to keep from crying right now.
Nah, you know, we can talk about that some other time. Let's go to our special guest, Gordie Howe, an absolute legend. Gordie, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And I'm listening to Gary. I said, I didn't know. I wouldn't put a uniform on against him.
Hey, listen, before we get to that, your 80th birthday is coming at the end of the month. So on behalf of hockey fans, sports fans everywhere, happy birthday and thank you for all you've done for our game.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. And, you know, I'd like to be able to do it again.
By the way, you're absolutely right. But let me ask you a question. What you've been known as Mr. Hockey. How did that start? And how do you feel about that?
Well, it's a heck of a compliment. Consider that Eddie Shore had that title, and when he passed away, my wife Colleen had heard about the nickname he had, and she said, "Well, what happens if somebody passes away and let's say secured, it's gone?" So she phoned into the office. Sure enough, the people at the league office were kind enough to look it up. The phone said the name's open. So that's how I got it.
You inherited it.
Well, actually, I inherited it. Yeah.
No, I think you earned it.
Yeah.
You know, with what did you have? 6 Art Ross trophies, 6 Hart trophies, 4 Stanley Cups in 6 years in the 50s. Let's go back a little bit in time. When you were 16 years old, you tried out for the New York Rangers and you didn't make it?
I was too young and uneducated as far as hockey goes because when I went to get in the building, I won't mention names, but the gentleman said, what would you like? And I said, I'd like to get in, number one. I said, what's your name? I told him, Gordie Howe. And he said, who brought you here?
That's incredible. So
I know. Oh, I was so mad I was really punched somebody. Maybe that, but I went out there and some of the older, Art Heller and a few of the older fellows really took care of me. And they sat me down. They knew I was totally lost. I didn't have equipment, so I had to get equipment which they were supposed to get, and they had forgot. So everything was a negative, and then when it turned around, like Tony Leswick is in there, so I had somebody from Saskatchewan I could talk to, and he just said, just go out there and enjoy yourself. So it's pretty hard to do, but he was a veteran.
But so you didn't make it with the Rangers. Perhaps it was destiny for you to become a Detroit Red Wing.
I think it must be. And, you know, I often, Gary, I was set, I sit there thinking about the people who entered my life in the game of hockey, and it goes right down to the bus driver who turned around at the school, and it packed the snow down very well. And when he saw me out there playing on shooting at a 4x8 piece of plywood, he stopped, and he said, "If you move out of the way for a little while, I'll flatten that out for you." So he took about 8 turns, and we could almost skate at the intersection. And so that's the kind of help I had. And then and I had the good fortunes of when I did go to play against the Air Force in Saskatoon, they needed some more help. I scored a goal, and the gentleman came over, and he patted me on the back and said, "Nice goal. We'll see you in the NHL." And when I was often that rang in my head for quite a while. You know, it's I guess at that time I decided if I ever make it, I'm going to be nice to kids, because you never know.
Well, you make it. You made it incredibly. You know, having started playing in the NHL in the mid-40s, okay, you played at age 41, the 1968-69 season, and you had over 100 points. What did you do physically to keep yourself in the kind of shape that you could play that productively in as physical a game as we have?
Well, I listened to the trainer and did what I wanted.
You love that direction.
I just heard Gary's remarks. But no, I had Jack Adams heading in and talking to me. And I'll tell you, the one thing that really struck home with me was he showed me how he wanted me to play. And they stuck him with Sid Lindsay, Sid Abel and Ted Lindsay, which was a big jump in my career. But he said what I should do is certain things. He said, "Do you understand that?" And I said, "I believe I do." And he said, "Well, fine. If you don't, I'll get somebody to replace you." Because that straightened you out in a hurry. You know, I grew about 5 inches. And then when the 3 days later, and a couple of games later, he called me up at the office. I said, "Uh-oh." He patted me on the back, and he said, "You're doing just right." Tommy Ivan was always a man. He'd give you, when he needed to, he'd rough you up a little, but he said he kept on your side by saying the nice things.
The beginning of the production line, what was it like skating with Sid Abel and Ted Lindsay? What was your relationship with them? And was it tough to adjust after Abel was traded to Chicago and Alex Delvecchio filled in for him?
No, I think Alex has been watching Sid play. And I had all the respect in the world for Alex, because I think I played with him longer than anybody. So he's and his Nemer, I guess we call it. He'd be sitting in the dressing room, and the coach is giving us an inspiring speech, and I swear he was going to fall asleep. But when his feet got cold, he was a player all the way.
What was it like playing with your sons, Marty and Mark? You were down in Houston. You actually played with them in Hartford as well, and you played in the NHL when you were 50 years old plus. What was it like?
I forgot my age. You know, that didn't help me. But to get a chance to play with the kids, I took the whole summer. I handled gravel to get strong, you know, and picking up things with two little fingers, you know, 100-weight pounders. And so I think I did everything I had to do. And Mel Hill was the one, another great hockey player, and he lived not too far from me. And I had the 4x8 plywood up against the pole, and that night I'd go out there and with the light from the city streets, I could shoot the pucks. And this car stopped. He got out and he said, "You got to be careful of traffic." And I am, sir. And he said, "Well," he said, "my name is so and so." I said, "I know that." You know, he said, "Well, I just want to show you." He replaced my left hand on the stick and showed him what to do. And then he said, "And don't go wide open." He said, "Cut it off at an angle so you get about 6 inches to cut at, shoot at." So darn if I didn't. I started hitting it with regularity, and he come by, and he had a smile on his face and beeped the horn. So I that's why I said I'm so confused of why all these good things were coming to help me. If I didn't make it, I'd be a criminal, I think.
Hardly, but good things come to good people. What are the changes you've seen in the game since you played?
Well, no, you know, they always said you have to skate, think, and and check man, you know. So it's all there. It's done in various different ways. And I think I was taught positional. And if you go the face-offs in front and the side of each of the goals and draw a line, then you got three pieces of ice. The centerman's in the middle. I take the right wing, and Teddy take the left. And he said, whenever we're in, Sid was like a coach too. We spent a lot of time together naturally, and Jack was smart enough to make us roommates so we could talk about the game. And he just told me, he said, when I'm in the corner fighting for the puck, he said, I'd consider it a favor if you stay out somewhere in the middle of the ice, just make sure there's room and show me where you want the puck. And he said, if I get it, then I don't have to look around for somebody's pass it to. You'll be there. So that how my I got my first goal that way. I said, boy, how smart can he get? It was a lot of fun.
It's chemistry.
It is. We're talking to Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe. Bill, did you have a question for Gordie?
Yeah, our board is lit up here, and I see that one of the questions coming in was something that I read about today, and it's about the Gordie Howe hat trick. And, Gordie, I read an article today that said that it only ever happened once, the goal, the assist, and the fight. And it said, first of all, I want to know if it did only happen once, and do you remember who it was? Because it said it happened on December the 22nd, 1955.
It was in New York. I played in, I forget the name right now. But he stuck me up pretty good in the middle on the ice, and then I hit a semi-breakaway, and if I can recall right, I circled behind the check and come up and drilled him. And
who was it?
I don't think it was Ezanicki, but it was of that category.
Interesting.
And then you dropped the gloves and away you went. And I'm assuming some writer the next day called it a Gordie Howe hat trick?
Yeah. I heard that from other people. And they said, what is that? And I said, I don't know. I was completely confused, because in those days you're traveling around. You didn't, you went to bed, got up early, caught the train, come home. And if you didn't carry a radio with you or something, you'd never get the news. But that was printed up in Detroit about a week later.
It's a long way from the era of the internet. You've spent a lot of time with your own foundation, the Gordie Howe Foundation. What are the types of activities that the foundation's involved in?
Well, thank God for hockey. It gives me a chance to walk in, and a lot of sports figures, you know, who do the same thing. As we sit there and sign autographs, and if it's, sometimes it's for a living, because you have to work a little bit in life. I would sit there and on the train, and when I was going to a point and where I had more or less an invitation to go to a school or something, or see some sick children in the hospital, then I would. And Ted Lindsay got me doing this. He had me signing postcards with my picture on it, and I'd have flying over there at on an airplane, I imagine we could go in about maybe 300-400 signings of the cards. So when I got into it with the kids, I could just hand them out.
Monday marks your 80th birthday, Gordie. Thank you for being with us, and have a happy, happy, healthy birthday. All the best.
I appreciate that. And both you gentlemen, stay healthy. It's the only way to go.
Thanks, Gordie. Happy birthday, man.
Thank you.
That was Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe. Gary, you mentioned six Art Ross trophies, six Hart trophies. In that article I read today was something that was just staggering, that 20 consecutive years, Gordie Howe finished as a top five scorer.
Absolutely right.
An unbelievable 20 years.
Yep.
Most players dream about playing 10 years, let alone 20, let alone finishing in the top 10. He was a top five scorer for 20 consecutive years.
Well, and some of his records, his scoring records, stood for 30 years until Wayne Gretzky, you know, came on the scene. Putting aside how remarkably skilled and talented he was, his endurance is an absolute marvel. And early on in his career, he had a pretty severe injury, either a neck injury or a skull fracture or something, which he came back from. He is a remarkable person.
I was in my late 20s when he was 52, and he draped me into the boards, and he had a way of lifting you up from behind. He put his arms around you, and once he got you elevated by even 30 pounds of lift, you had no brakes. I mean, you couldn't dig in to stop. We hit the boards, we both fall to the ice, and he says, you all right? I won't tell you what I said to him because I was kind of into the game and it didn't matter that it was Gordie Howe. But I remember getting to the locker room between periods and half of our guys were, I had a shift against Gordie Howe. I said, gentlemen, did you notice we were losing 3-0? Did that mean anything to anybody? It was such a thrill for all of us to play against Gordie. He was 52 playing in Hartford.
And were you all right after he hit you?
Oh, yeah, it didn't hurt him. He draped me into the... He didn't elbow me. I would not have been all right had he used his elbows. But he's been an unbelievable ambassador to the game. He turns 80 on Monday, so happy birthday to Gordie Howe. Line up on the phone lines, everybody, and get ready with the emails. Here's the phone number, 877-645-6696, the email address, nhlhour@nhl.com. We're going to step out when we come back. Gary Bettman will answer your questions by phone and email, all in the NHL Hour. Blank, okay? I mean, you don't have to get all over it. I know one thing. When we go to the music trivia competitions, the commish is with me.
How could you have not known that was the Grateful Dead?
I blanked. I mean, I'm allowed to blank.
Did you blank at that period in your life, or did you blank now?
We'll go offline on that, too, when we're talking about the contract. Hey, the phone number here, 877-645-6696. And before we get to the callers, and there are a number of them, don't forget Sunday, NBC in the U.S., TSN in Canada. It's always fierce when Atlantic Division teams get together. Jaromir Jagr and the New York Rangers. Jagr back in Pittsburgh taking on Sidney Crosby and the Penguins. By the way, Sidney is coming back to the Penguins lineup tonight. Sunday, NBC, 12:30 Eastern, TSN in Canada. Check your local listings for the station and the time in your area. They only get bigger, they only get better, and the points are valuable to both of them. Now we get to the phones.
Let's do it. Alan in New York, you're on XM204 with Bill and Gary. Alan?
Yes, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good yourself.
Good, thank you. Although you're a little staticky.
What's your question? Sorry about that. Let me step out right here. The commissions, I have a question for you. First of all, I want to congratulate you on your show, which is spectacular to be able to have access to somebody of your stature on radio and to talk to.
Well, thank you.
Second of all, my question is, I'm a center ice fan, and well, not fan, but a member. And I'm a Montreal Canadiens fan living in New York, and I do not get any of the home game broadcasts. It's out of the games that are done in Montreal, it's always the other team's broadcast, which I find very annoying. I'd love to have the broadcast from Montreal when it's a home game for them. So that was my pet peeve with center ice.
My guess is that, and it's a guess, is that most of the home games, the ones that aren't national on CBC or on TSN, are probably telecast in French. And for a U.S. audience, I assume Center Ice is simply presuming that not enough people speak French who would be watching the game to make it worthwhile to bring the signal down. That is just a guess.
No, but see, that's why you're commissioner.
Why? Because I can make good guesses?
Because it makes all the sense in the world, because you're quick on your feet.
Well, okay. I presume that that's the case, although it's an interesting question, and it's one that I'm going to find out
sure.
for certain, because I'd like to know if the guess was accurate.
How is it decided? I agree. Sometimes you'll get one, sometimes the other. How is it determined?
Well, actually, now, particularly on DirecTV, most of the times you're getting both feeds.
Uh-huh.
They've increased the package that way, so you have your choice. But my guess is they've made the decision not to bring the French version in. But you can get a lot of Montreal Canadian games because a fair number are on the CBC and on TSN as well. Alan in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. You're on with Bill and Gary, XM204.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call again. I'm just curious as to why the NHL seems so adamant about trying to increase scoring in the league, because I think that if you ask a lot of hockey fans, most of them will say that 2-1 and 3-2 games are a lot more exciting than 7-6 and 8-7 games.
by the way, that's a fair question, and I think some of the discussion is initiated in the media and by fans.
Have you been adamant about it?
I believe that the game needed to be made more wide open, that there needed to be an emphasis on scoring opportunities. Mm-hmm. There needed to be an emphasis on speed and skill. And while scoring's dropped a little, that indicates that maybe that we're de-emphasizing speed, skill, and scoring chances. And we do believe that the goaltenders are probably a little bit bigger than they should be, and that's keeping scoring down. But I believe that we're in the range of where we should be on scoring chances. What I'd like to see a little bit more, because a little bit more scoring gives you a little more unpredictability in the outcome of the game.
Right.
It gives you more lead changes. And that's what we'd like to see. Frankly, if every game was decided in the last minute or two with a spectacular goal, that would be great. But at the end of the day, we're not looking for 13-goal games. Frankly, we know that the 3-2 is the most prevalent score that we have. It was before the work stoppage, and it is now after the changes.
Is it really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
That's why, you know, Frank Brown gives me all these statistics.
All right, Frank.
Joseph in Ontario, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM204.
I have a question. Why do you think that is so hard for teams to stay consistent, such as the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, I think it's a question. It's a great question. It's a function of the fact that the competitive balance has never been better. The fact is that each team can now afford to be competitive under the system that we now have. There's a range, and everybody's got to spend in their payroll for players within that range. And so it's now a question of how good your team building scheme, your team building skills are, what the chemistry is you create on your team. And those are the teams that have the best chemistry and the best composition of players that are going to win. And that's where management becomes more important. It's not a question anymore of how much you spend. And since everybody's in the same ballpark, that's why the races are so exciting. And it's also why every game in the regular season matters. Because if you look at the races that we're seeing this year, a point lost in October, November, today, it may be the difference in whether or not a team makes the playoffs.
But the truth is, and a lot of fans that follow one team and not the entire league don't pay attention to this, there is a consistency, and it is inconsistency. And it's because of the competitive balance. The Red Wings, who are by far the top team in the regular season, lost 10 of 11 games at one point. The Flyers lost 10 straight. Now the Flyers have won 4 straight. The vast majority, if not all of the teams, have had pronounced and prolonged winning streaks and losing streaks this season.
You're absolutely right. Ottawa was another team that came out of the gate red hot and cooled off dramatically. And it's fascinating and exciting if you're a fan to watch what's going on. To follow up on the last two caller ago question about center ice and the availability of Montreal Canadian games on center ice in the United States, all of the games that are broadcast in English are available on center ice, and it's the games that are broadcast in French that are not.
Bingo. Your guess was great.
Well, you know, sometimes it pays to be lucky. Phil in Illinois, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM204.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure. Thank you for calling.
I've got two quick questions for you. One is, when will the official schedule of the draft be announced, and when will tickets be available? And the second is, who is in charge or oversees the stat counters at the different arenas, the people that count the number of hits and shots on goals, and what kind of quality assurance is there to make sure there's consistency between the different stadiums and making sure that a hit is counted as a hit and a shove is not counted as a hit?
The employees who do the stats are actually working for the NHL. We monitor what goes on. Benny Ercolani, in particular, out of our Toronto office, keeps an eye on our stats. And frankly, when we think that something is a bit askew, we take a look and we make adjustments. Obviously, there is a subjectivity to witnessing what takes place on the ice. We just want to make sure that it's consistent and it's not done with any bias. With respect to the draft, the first round will be on Friday evening, June 20th. Rounds 2 through 7 will be on Saturday, June 21st. The draft will be in Ottawa, And I'm not quite sure when tickets go on sale. It'll probably be in another few weeks as we get closer to the draft.
All right. Well, thank you very much for those answers.
Thank you. Jerry in North Carolina, you're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I got a follow-up to the DirecTV and one question. I've been a Center Ice subscriber for many years, and they do show some Canadian games with French announcers, because I have watched a couple Canadian games this year with French announcing. So they do show it on occasion, just maybe not on a regular basis.
That's exactly right. On occasion they will. That's probably a question of when they have enough capacity to include it, but every game that's on in English is included in the Center Ice package.
Right. My question is that being from North Carolina, and we have, I guess, shown that we are a viable NHL market now, is it in the thinking or in the workings that we are going to get the All-Star game that was discussed?
We owe you an All-Star game, and there's no question that the Triangle in North Carolina has become a terrific hockey market.
You bet.
And we're grateful for the support, and we owe you an All-Star game. We're going to be in Montreal next year. We're going to go to the Olympics. We owe an All-Star game for one that was canceled during the work stoppage, but you are in our minds and on our radar screen because we owe our great fans in North Carolina, the great Hurricanes fans, we owe you an All-Star game, and we will pay up. I just can't promise you the time.
By the way,
go ahead.
I just wanted to tell you that, you know, we are huge hockey fans here, and it's unbelievable. I'm originally from Detroit, and it's unbelievable the amount of knowledge and the amount of fans that are here and know the game now, and that I think we've definitely proven we're an NHL market now.
There's no question about it, and I remember being at Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final against Edmonton, and everybody in the arena stood for the entire game, and I don't think I've ever seen that at any professional sporting event ever, and that's a testament to the great sports fans in Carolina.
The Hurricanes are truly one of the great success stories this year with all of the injuries they've had, and it looks as if they're going to wrap up the division crown, the Southeast Division crown, and I get to vote on the Adams Trophy as the league's top coach, and right now Peter Laviolette is in my mix. I don't have to have it done until the last day of the regular season, but I think the job that he has done was as banged up as that team has been. It's truly one of the great success stories.
Pete Carmanos, Jimmy Rutherford have been doing it all for that franchise. They've always believed in that market, and they do a great job with that team. Jeff in New York, you're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
Hey, guys. First, an honor to be on with both you guys. I have a question, but I want to make a comment. I'm really, really thrilled with the NHL Network. It's great to have hockey 24 hours a day. And my second comment, being a Ranger fan, I'm really spoiled. I had Sam and JD for many years. And when JD left to go to the Blues, I was really disappointed. I was hoping they'd find someone to replace him that would be equal or on par with JD. And actually, Joe Micheletti is phenomenal, very knowledgeable. He's very entertaining. Him and Sam make a great combination. Just wanted to let you know that. My question is regarding the ice. Is that monitored by the NHL, or does each arena have somebody that monitors that? Is there somebody from the league that goes around for each game to make sure the quality is where it should be?
That's a great question, and let me take the ice part first, and then I'll go to your comments. Dan Craig works for the league. He was the ice maker in Edmonton, and he's perceived to be the best, the dean of ice makers worldwide. In fact, the International Olympic Committee and the International Ice Hockey Federation hire him to consult on the Olympic ice conditions. We track what goes on the ice. We have the officials constantly providing us with reports on ice conditions. We get feedback from the players, and we have Dan go in wherever there's a problem. We are very sensitive to ice conditions. We know how important they are, but it's difficult in some buildings to keep the ice as good as we want. Some of these buildings are being used 200 nights a year because there's either a basketball team or concerts or the circus. And when you have a basketball game or a concert, you know, only a matter of hours before we have to get the ice ready for a game, it makes it tough. But having good ice conditions is a priority. And if you notice, over the years, we've changed some practices. So, for example, during the television timeouts, you see people, either gentlemen or lovely women, coming out on the ice to clean the snow away from the boards and in front of the nets, because we want to make sure that everything's being done to keep the ice good. We have rules that whatever promotions you're doing between periods, Everybody has to be off the ice with 12 minutes to go so we can do an appropriate flooding of the ice and let the ice settle in. So ice is foremost in our mind. The comment on the NHL Network, thank you, and if you don't have the NHL Network and you're a listener, I commend it to you, not because we're proud of it alone, but because you will see game highlights like you see nowhere else. It really tells the story of what's happened in a game, what the great plays are. It's better than you can get anywhere else in terms of what's going on in the NHL on that night. And MSG has always done a great job on their network. They've always had quality announcers. Sam Rosen's one of the great announcers in all the sports, and the New York fans are fortunate to get the coverage of their team the way they do.
I'm fortunate to get a chance to work with Sam on NHL Radio. And you know what? When I was actually auditioning for ESPN in the mid-'80s, one of the first five games that I worked five games with five different play-by-play people. Sam Rosen was one of those five back in the mid-'80s, and that's how I got my start. Sam was a part of that. Stay on hold, everybody. We appreciate your patience. Our bank is lit up. We're going to get to all of you when we come back on the NHL Hour. Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, set to take your calls and answer your emails. The Atlanta Flames for 5 years, so I know Southern Rock, okay? Who was the Atlanta Rhythm Section before they became the Atlanta Rhythm Section?
I know music. I don't know trivia that you read in People magazine.
They were the Classics Four.
Oh, great.
They did Stormy and Spooky and, come on.
You must be older than me.
I am by a year or two.
This was a generational thing on the music. But that's okay.
You know what?
But talking about that, I mean, I love when we play this music. It makes me feel 35 years younger and much less stressed out than you think I am now.
It makes me feel 37 years younger.
There you go.
How's that? We're going to get to an email. By the way, I'm
Stormy?
Don't you remember that?
Yes,
Dennis
I
Yost
do.
In the Classics 4.
It's not on the top of my playlist.
Okay. Well, I'm choosing the music next week. How's that?
We'll have to discuss that offline.
We've got a whole agenda now of things we got to do, including this email. I want to get to this. Glenn from Orlando has sent us an email. He says, is the NHL going to consider widening the goals? It seems fundamentally unfair when you see the goalies today all padded up versus the goalies of the past who were half the size with their minimal padding. Plus, it seems fundamentally unfair when the players today are being asked to score goals against goalies who are allowed to wear inflated padding. The fans want to see someone break Gretzky's records. How is that possible without widening the goals?
I'm not so sure that anybody's so anxious to see Wayne Gretzky's records broken.
Glenn in Orlando is.
Well, what does Wayne have, 60 individual records?
61, maybe somebody's come close.
It is incredible, and I doubt most of his records will ever be broken. Having said that, there's always been lots of discussion of the fact that the goaltenders, by virtue of their equipment, are bigger than they need to be. We have formed a committee with the Players Association, and that's something that we hope and intend to address in the off season. There has been discussion, primarily idle chatter, about making nets bigger. If anybody ever gets to the point of seriously considering that, it would be an absolute last resort. I think the goaltenders are bigger than they need to be. We want them to be safe. We don't want them to get hurt.
But you think the equipment's bigger than it needs to be.
Well, the equipment is not designed to protect the net against the puck going in.
Right.
It's designed to keep a goaltender from getting hurt, and we think we can make some adjustments. And with the cooperation of the Players Association, we're hoping we can make some major steps and modifications in that regard over the summer.
E.J. Raddick brought up an interesting point today. He said human bodies are round. They're not square, but all of the goalie equipment is flat and square, so make the equipment round.
And there are flaps and padding in places where, you know, they have devices on goaltender equipment called cheaters. okay?
And appropriately named.
We're going to see what we can do to fix those. Let's go back to the callers, and let's take Craig in Indiana. The note next to you, Craig, says Bill was the best hockey announcer ever, so I'm glad to get you on the line, and you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM204.
Who did it? I missed it. Who was the best announcer ever?
It said Bill, best announcer ever.
Oh, no, I was kind of more leaning on Bill and Gary, Gary Thorne, and that was kind of my question, kind of a two-part question.
Well, Gary's not here, so I'll just go ahead and thank you on behalf of Gary, okay? Thanks, Craig.
Sir, you two were the best combo ever. And
thank
it
you.
Was just a small note that I had that just a small improvement for the game would be somehow or another to get him back in the play-by-play booth. Gary Thorne was a very dramatic announcer, and I thought he was great for the game. All those great highlights with his voice on it. And the two of you together were great. Mr. Bettman, this is great that you do this. This is a wonderful thing. You're doing a great job with the game. On that same subject of television, I think Versus does a great job. They're passionate for the game. They promote the game. I'm not a big fan of what ESPN does for the game. Are rumors being, are you still chatting with them and trying to do a different TV deal? I will hang up, and thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. I think people should anticipate the status quo for the foreseeable future, and I think the status quo has been very good to us, NBC and Versus, and Versus continues to grow. I think they're in now 75 million homes. People are very pleased, fans are very pleased with the treatment that we get on Versus, and over the years we did, and this isn't to knock ESPN, they were a good partner, but when you have all the sports that they do, there were hockey fans who felt that we weren't getting our fair share of the attention, and so I don't think anybody should anticipate any immediate changes in what we're doing on broadcasting. I agree with the caller, Bill, that you and Gary Thorne were a terrific
Thank
combination.
You. I said this before, Gary's an ESPN guy, and should the NHL end up back at ESPN, Craig in Indiana and everybody else will most likely hear Gary back calling games.
Unless he's too busy doing other things to be bothered with us.
He'll make room. Believe me, he misses it.
Hey, Joel in Minnesota, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM204.
Hey, guys, you do a great job.
Thank you.
I do have a lot of things to bring up, but I ain't going to take a lot of your time. I do miss you and Gary calling games. And another guy that was really good was Tom Meese. I really miss his voice, too.
That was a tragedy, his passing.
Yeah, yes, it was. I really miss him. But a few things I was going to bring up. Somebody already brought up the pads, no-touch icing. I'll say a few things and then hang up and listen. But who votes on that? Do the owners vote on that, or does the Players Association vote on that?
Let me answer the question, and the short answer is all rule changes require a two-thirds vote of the NHL Board of Governors. On the board, each team has one vote as representation. We have a process where we take suggested rule changes first through the general managers as a group, and we have a competition committee so that we can get the players to sign off as well.
Does it have to get through the general managers before it gets to the league vote?
As a general matter, the general managers will thoroughly consider something and make a recommendation. It's not impossible, but I would find it unlikely that there would be a rule change that the board would approve that the managers wouldn't, because I presume most general managers have the ear of their owner who casts
sure.
the ultimate vote.
Where do the players fit in?
Players are in the competition committee, and to the extent that the competition committee blesses a rule change, then there's no issue with the rule change being made. Let's talk to Patrick in Columbus, Ohio. Patrick, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM204.
Hello, gentlemen. We're Blue Jacket fans. Are looking forward to seeing Mr. Bettman tomorrow in Columbus.
Exactly right. I will be there for the day, and I'm looking forward to taking in the game tomorrow night.
Well, we hope you have a good time. Anyways, my question has to do with the attendance being up so much this year at the gates, and that's a great sign. But however, the Columbus Blue Jackets have dropped now from 19th to 29th, and I'm quite concerned as a season ticket holder what your feel is on that. I know we're not making the playoffs yet, We're trying, but we're not quite there with Nashers. So what is your feel on the attendance in Columbus?
Well, we never like to see attendance down anywhere, especially in places like Columbus. I think some of it is a little bit of fan frustration for the team having yet to make the playoffs, but I think the future in Columbus is bright. It's a good young team. Nash is somebody I'd be happy to build my team around, and this team will get better. Interesting on attendance around the league. For the month of March, we're playing to 97% of capacity. Attendance is up, and we will set a all-time attendance record again, the third year in a row coming back from the work stoppage. I think our attendance is up somewhere around 2%, and that's just a great testament to hockey fans being the best sports fans in the world.
I mean, breaking the record coming out of the work stoppage and then breaking it last year and going to break it again this year. Wow.
It's a good game. With
it's
great fans.
It's an unbelievable game. It's as good as it's ever been.
Well, and I think it's also a function of how competitive the races have
without
been.
Without a doubt.
And so if you're a team that's out of it and you haven't been in the playoffs for a while, or in Columbus's case, if ever, at some point the fans
sure.
are sending you a signal. But I believe that as that team gets more and more competitive, they'll be back and that building will be filled again nationwide. And interestingly enough, for the season, based on the track that we're on, we will, as a league, average more than 17,000 people per game for the first time in the league's history.
Fantastic.
It is fantastic. Yep. Jim in Atlanta, you're on with Bill and Gary, and this is XM 204.
Thanks for taking my call, gentlemen. And, Commissioner, I think you've done a terrific job in your tenure. And as a Penguins fan, I particularly want to thank you for all that you might have done last year to help ensure that our team stays in Pittsburgh. And I know that the fan base really appreciates that. My question has to do with playoff seeding. I certainly understand why each of the division leaders get automatic playoff berths, but could you explain why they automatically get the number 1, 2, and 3 seeds rather than seeding all 8 teams by their final point totals? And I think the poster child for that situation, at least in my opinion, is the Southeast Division, where you could have a team with 93, 94 points at the end of the year taking the number 3 seed, and you may have 2 teams with higher point totals that take the 4 and 5 seed?
Great question, and the short answer is it demonstrates the importance of the regular season, and it also reflects the fact that teams play an unbalanced schedule, particularly when we've had 8 games this year played within the division, and your divisional play it varies by who else is in your division. It also makes the races exciting, because while there may be some teams in the Southeast that might not overtake the 7th or 8th seed, if they can beat Carolina, who's currently in first place in the Southeast, they catapult into the playoffs. So when you look at our standings, it keeps everybody in the mix. And so we think the system has worked pretty well. The place where I hear the most pushback is in the second round. Okay, I understand why you seed all 3 teams, 1, 2, and 3, the division winners, for the first round, but why give a team that has less points that benefit in the second round? That's something we've discussed over the years, but it's not anything that there's been a whole lot of momentum behind to change.
Has it ever proven to be any kind of big advantage in the second round? Do the numbers indicate that that's an unfair advantage to that team that perhaps is a number 3 seed with fewer points? I don't know that it has.
Certainly perceptionally, and one is not coming to my head, and so I'll plead the 5th and say I can't recall one.
I don't recall it either, yeah. So I'm assuming that it hasn't happened. So,
but it's one of those great debates that fans like to have, and it's great to have fans passionate about it. With respect to Pittsburgh and the last caller's reference to that, Pittsburgh's always been a great hockey town, and it would have been an absolute shame, disgrace, put any words on it you want, if the Penguins had a move. And I understand there was an article in the paper yesterday that they've made some architectural adjustments to the design, and they're getting ready to break ground, and it's going to be a great day for hockey in Pittsburgh when the Penguins move into the new building.
Just a shame they've got a team that's old and not very good.
What team is that you're
Penguins.
Talking about?
I
think you're referring to their building, not to their team. That's the igloo.
I love the igloo.
I do too, but.
I understand.
Daryl in Maryland, this is XM 204. You're on with Bill and Gary.
That's me, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
My question is, and
according to Tuesday night's Capitals Hurricanes game and the controversial goal, the announcers for the local station here did a real good job of being unbiased in what their call was, but they brought up a good point. Seems that the league has several angles available to them, going back to replay in Toronto and such things. And I was wondering when or if those angles would be made available after the game, naturally, to the teams involved. And just one point that I'm going to hang up and listen to you answer to. My vote for Coach of the Year for Bruce Boudreau. And thank you for your time.
Bruce Boudreau has done a good job.
No doubt.
He'll give your Peter Laviolette the nomination. Pretty good run for
Kerry,
the money.
Listen, it's hard this year. There's so many coaches that have done a good job, so this is not an easy call. I'm going to wait and see what happens in the last week. By the way, I didn't see that goal. I was clicking around to five games. I have heard from numerous – that was so good. I've heard from numerous people that they got the call right.
They did get the call right. Yeah. They rarely get the call wrong. If it happens – five times in the course of a season, and that probably constitutes 8,000 or 9,000 reviews. It's a lot. Although what's interesting is, other than the overheads, which are anchored in the building, which sometimes the broadcasters hook into and sometimes they don't, all the other feeds and all the other angles that we get to see on video replay come from the broadcasters.
So what that means is that the fan watching the game sees close to everything, if not everything that the guys in Toronto see?
Yeah, I think it's the rare exception that ultimately they don't see on replay the definitive play that got them to make the call that they made.
Is the overhead the most valuable?
Not always. It depends on what they're looking for. In other words, if it's a high stick, it's the most valuable unless there's a blockage either from the water bottle or a piece of equipment as to whether or not the puck crossed the line, whether or not the net was off the pegs, whether or not it was kicked in. You know, those types of calls, overhead doesn't always help you because it's just focused in on the goal line. There you have it. Let's go to Sean in Ontario. You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary.
How are you doing, gentlemen?
We're doing
good,
great.
Thanks.
How are you?
Excellent, thank you. I have a question and then maybe a little favor if I could ask. But with Gordie Howe, great interview, by the way.
Thank you.
Just wondering what your favorite player was. I mean, I'm a Bruins fan, so obviously I'm 38, almost 40, so I'm a Ray Bourque fan. I just wondered who your fan was.
I'll let you go first, Bill, before I cop out on my answer.
I grew up a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, and was a kid when they won their last Stanley Cup in the late 60s. I was a Dave Keon guy. I love Davey Keon of the Leafs. I played a lot like him in the sense that I was, penalty killer, skater kind of guy. So I looked at Dave Keon as the guy that I liked.
That's interesting. I always hesitate to answer this question because of the position I'm in. And so there were a series of players that I liked. Obviously, Wayne Gretzky, as he was, marching his way through Edmonton and then into Los Angeles. The Canadiens teams, Gainey, back in the 70s was great. And Gordie Howe, as a kid growing up, watching him play and what he represented. And then, growing up in this area, seeing, and this will make Ranger fans upset, seeing Chico Resch and Billy Smith and Denny Potvin playing on the
Islanders. You're not going to go there, are you?
No. And then watching J.D. play goal for the Garden and Jacquemin and Rod Gilbert. I mean, I can't pick one anymore because the relationships I've been able to develop with a number of the former players over the years, I don't want to be accused of playing favorites. And also what happens is some of what I thought when I was younger and what I know now has jaded my view of the world, generally for the better. Keith in Arkansas, how are you? You're on XM 204.
I'm doing fine, gentlemen. How are you today?
We're doing okay.
You bet.
I had a multi-part question concerning promoting the game at the, particularly at the minor league level.
Sure.
I live close to Central Arkansas, and we've had two minor league teams that have both folded, and we've got three professional, you know, three NHL teams within 8 hours driving distance from Little Rock. And I was wondering what the NHL might be able to do as far as promoting the game so that we could get a minor league team that would stick around, and also what would it take to keep a minor league team in the area? I know that they can't require the same level of attendance as an NHL team because it probably wouldn't happen. But anyway, that's my question, and I'll take your answer off the air.
Thank you. The economics of minor league sports, all sports, is difficult. You need a facility to play in. You need somebody in a local community who wants to own the club. And you need fan support. Whatever sport it is, you got to be filling the building or it doesn't work. And my guess is that for whatever reason, the two teams that failed in Arkansas weren't getting enough attendance to make it work. Obviously, TV isn't a factor because most minor league hockey teams don't get their games on television. But it needs fan support. It needs people going to the games on a regular basis. That's the most important thing you need. Robert in Pittsburgh, XM204 with Bill and Gary. What can we do for you?
Well, good afternoon, fellas. First off, I'm on my way home to get my George LaRock jersey to go to the game tonight.
Well, you enjoy the game.
Oh, I absolutely intend to. And I must admit that Mike Lang happens to be my favorite broadcaster. No offense, Bill.
Listen, good choice, man. Great choice.
He is. Elvis has left the house.
Yeah, Elvis has left the building, definitely. I guess my question is, and my sentiments are the same with a lot of other Pittsburgh people, is that thank you so much for helping secure with the governor and the county and all that to get a new arena. But well, now that we have it, and it looks like it's going to be a fantastic arena, is the NHL going to do a lot of fanfare when we open that arena outside of raising a Stanley Cup banner that first year?
Well, actually, the events surrounding the opening of the arena are within the province of the team and the people operating the arena, which in this case will be the Penguins. I have no doubt that the Penguins will make this a celebration as festive, as emotional, and exciting as Pittsburgh has ever seen. It is going to be just spectacular. We know there are great sports fans in Pittsburgh, and I think having this great new home for the Penguins is just going to be spectacular for everybody. And by the way, it's not just going to provide a home for the Penguins. There'll be rock concerts of Bill's generation and mine and more recent, circuses, family shows, conventions, and the like. This is going to be a great gathering place for Pittsburgh, and we're very excited about it. And to repeat what I said before, this team needed a new building, and it would have been an absolute shame if the Penguins couldn't have stayed in Pittsburgh. And the governor and the mayor and Ron Burkle and everybody, and Mario Lemieux, of course, everybody deserves an enormous amount of credit for having gotten this done.
Hey, Robert, get on home and scratch your back with a hacksaw.
That's a pretty good imitation.
One of those five games, my first five on ESPN in the mid-'80s, Mike Lang was one of those five guys, so was Sam Rosen.
It was a good imitation, but not as good as the original.
Well, it's a form of flattery. I'm putting that down on our agenda list to talk offline about.
Well, we have a lot to chat about.
I'm going to give you a crack at your favorite impression, though.
Oh, no. I don't sing happy birthday, and I don't do things that I know I have no aptitude for. It's only an opportunity to embarrass myself.
That's okay. You're a good commissioner. You can keep at that job. You do a good job with that. Hey, listen, I want to let everybody know we're back next week at 4 Eastern, but 2 weeks from now is when the playoffs start. We're going to have a special playoff preview show that'll be 4 Eastern on Tuesday. That's 2 weeks from this week, Tuesday.
Does that mean we're doing two shows that week or just one?
No. Next week we're doing the one, and then the next week we're doing the one on Tuesday. Don't confuse me now. Hey, listen, Phil Esposito, Jim Taddy are next in the slot. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week at 4 Eastern, everybody.